This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Hey, and welcome to this week's show. Man, oh man, I'm so excited. We have a terrific interview and comedy set coming up from not only one of the funniest comics of the 80s and 90s, a guy that participated in our TV shows, Laughs in the Park, special concerts. He's done it all with Laughs Unlimited, and we're happy to have him here. And I got to tell you, he's more than a comic. He's a friend. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Bob Worley.
Wow, you got a lot of people in your house. It sounds jammed.
The studio is jammed for you, Bob. They're so happy to have you here. We've been waiting several months to try to get together and get this interview done, and we're so excited to get you on the phone. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, you know, packing kidney stones, but other than that, outstanding.
You know, you'll do anything for a little light entertainment, passing kidney stones.
I played myself another prop comic.
There you go.
I gotta tell you, it takes a while to get that prop out.
Anyway, yeah, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, hold on. Yeah. Ta-da!
don't visualize that. It's not a pretty sight.
Well, that's true. So for the listening audience, going back to, well, we're gonna go through some of the history, but Bob has been one of the regular acts you've heard on the podcast over the last several months. He's a very funny comic and good friend. He lives down in Pasadena, California, South Pasadena, let's be correct.
Right.
In the Los Angeles area, for those of you outside of California. We have been friends and sharers of the comedy history for a long time. Let's kind of give them a little background. How did you get into comedy? I mean, I know you're a really funny guy, but it must have started in school or something.
I figured out right away I couldn't do anything else. I really cannot hold a regular job.
So comedy was your last choice.
My last regular job said, look, no matter what you do around here, we're not going to fire you, so stop it. And I didn't know what they were talking about. It's like, what? I'm not trying to get fired.
So, you know, you have a great personality and a good sense of humor. Did that come up early with your family?
I think so. For me, it was a way to survive. You know, I kind of grew up in a rough neighborhood. So if you walk around cracking everybody up, you survive. Because nobody wants to beat up like the retarded kid.
So. Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Upland, California, which is about 30 miles east of here.
And in a kind of a rough neighborhood at the time?
In a rough neighborhood. I grew up with guys named Angel and Tootie. So.
Tootie, I think I've heard of him. So So your sense of humor developed itself early. When did you actually hit the stage for the first time?
Oh, geez. Probably in the 70s. I used to be with like a skit group. I would say improv group, but it was really a skit group. We came up with these little skits, and then we went out to L.A., like the Comedy Store, and Osco's Comedy Cave, and did that kind of stuff. And, you know, we bombed everywhere.
So. Well, that's how you get started, but you didn't do it as a solo act. You did it as part of a group. No, I don't think I knew that about you.
Yeah, and the guys kind of, you know, after a while, they just said, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. It's too much of a hassle. So I said, well, I'm going to keep doing it. But I started doing my skits by myself. So I think even Robert Aguayo said, he goes, hey, were you not in a skit group? Because you keep like talking to people that aren't there.
Let's give a little basis. Was there a name to the skit group?
We are called An Act Sort Of.
An Act Sort Of. Well, right. That kind of has a comedic tone to it. And you did
kind of. And that was the problem. It was always kind of.
Well, it gave you a little initial stage experience, though. So that must have helped you when you started going solo.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a different skill set. So I had to learn that and develop that over time. And you know, I like I said, I bombed everywhere. But, you know, I'm really stupid, so I just keep doing it. Oh, I got like a hook, so I'm going to keep going on.
Well, I think you had a lot of success. I know that you were, as I alluded to in the intro, not only were you a regular act starting off in the 80s working for Me and Laughs Unlimited, but you quickly became a headliner and then were right through the heyday of the club. So you got involved in the concerts, yeah. the Laughs in the Parks, the TV shows. So, I mean, in my mind, you were a very successful comic, but let's let the audience know, when did you first get to Laughs Unlimited and how did that happen? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually do remember that because I think it was 82, maybe. And the only reason we went there, we used to go up to San Francisco with some friends and I, because we could do the open mic nights there and just to hit a bunch of them, just to get time on stage. And on the way back, a friend had a showcase at your place, Joel Berman.
Oh, and, Joel, right.
Yeah, yeah. So I was with him and another guy and, you know, Peter Golke, and we were stopping by, and the great Scott was there. So we had worked together before, and he goes, oh, hey, Bob, I know Bob. Why don't you give him some stage time? You know, I'll give up 10 minutes of my act.
So, oh, great Scott. Yeah, for the audience, yeah. Great Scott was one of our regular headlining magicians. He's been mentioned a couple times. He hasn't been on the show because it's tough to show magic on a podcast. Right. But yeah. Great Scott was definitely a regular at all of my clubs over a couple decades. Very, very talented magician. But I didn't.
Super nice.
I don't have the memory you have. I didn't know that he gave up time so that you could get on stage. That's right. Pretty impressive and pretty well, nice of me to let you.
You weren't there. I think Bob was, not there.
That's why it happened.
That's probably why it happened, because Bob was there and he just thought, oh, okay. And I remember Mac was behind, whom I didn't know yet, was behind the bar that night. Yeah, I got in and did it. And then about a few days later, I got a phone call from you. And the first thing you said, not even hello, was, hey, what'd you do? Blow everybody up here? Because they seem to love you. That was my intro to you.
Quite a professional, wasn't I?
Right, and I think I said, no, not everybody. But,
well, so you came up, you did a unscheduled showcase, thanks to Great Scott the Magician. And yep. then Bob and Mac and everybody enjoyed your little guest set so much, they overloaded me with information. So much so that I called you and accused you of sexual treats.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I was wearing braces at the time on my teeth. So.
Well, the guys were all walking funny for a while. Boom, boom.
Thank you. Hey, I'll do anything for work.
I think it worked out well for Laughs. Now, your first paid gig, you must have been an opening act?
No, I came in as a feature. It was John Pate. Myself and Dave Strassman.
Wow. And good show.
That guy that Dave worked with, that Chuck Wood guy.
Yeah, yeah. The ventriloquial figure that moved on its own. It was very
spooky. What a jerk. You know, I got along great with Dave, but Chuck, what an asshole.
Chuck was always a little rough when it came to relationships, but I think a lot of ventriloquial figures have that problem. That's pretty impressive to come in as a featured actor first time. So the word on your set must have been excellent.
Yeah, you must have been hurting for somebody. I think somebody dropped out and you just said, hey, call this guy.
Well, so that started our relationship as a comedy club comic, but we quickly became friends because I know that you not only work, every year after that for many, many years, but you were soon part of the Laughs family where you were getting involved in bowling night and some of the other fun things.
That was the best thing about going to your club is that you feel like you're going up to see friends. You know, it wasn't, I got to go up there and do this, you know, a week of hell somewhere. It was, oh, good. I'm going to go up and see some friends. You know, and I knew it was going to be a fun week. And I knew, you know, you'd pretty much let me do almost anything, you know.
We even brought the famous Elvis ghost in.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, and that's what made it fun to work there. It's like, because you guys were into comedy, and that's why I liked your club. It was like a bunch of friends running the club, doing it right, and just the shows were set up right, and you guys had fun with it. So yeah. that made it a lot easier to go to.
Yeah, and it's been mentioned a couple times in earlier podcasts that I think part of our success was that it was other comics like Dave Coulier and Bob Saget that kind of helped us lay out the groundwork for how to treat comics. And if you treat the entertainers with respect and a certain civility.
Hey, now wait a minute. I didn't go that far. I said like Sam.
Well, I just meant that I'm happy and appreciative that you felt comfortable and thought you were going to work with friends as opposed to just another road gig.
Well, I didn't think that. I mean, I knew that, you know, I felt like, cause your staff, everybody there was super nice. And, you know, like, again, they're like your friends. So yeah. You're always happy to see them. They seem happy to see you. And
now you ended up working several weeks every year for a number of years, but you played clubs all over the West Coast, didn't you?
Well, yeah, pretty much all over the country. At least one.
Yeah, all from coast to coast, you were doing road work?
Yeah, because, you know, the secret of with me was I never asked about money. They would just call and go, hey, do you want to work here? And I said, sure. And then Bernice would go, so what are they going to pay you? I go, I don't know.
Oh, geez. We should tell everybody, Bernice is your lovely wife who is a dear, dear friend, and you are very lucky to marry. But it is funny that she was quick to point out that it's nice to know what you're getting paid.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to ruin the deal with quibbling over money.
Well, you were
still pay me what I'm worth.
Well, you know, that kind of brings it back to comedy as an art form versus a business. For it is a business, and the money is important, but there's a certain segment of the entertainers that it was the art form that was actually more important than the business. Some it's the other way around. And obviously, you just really enjoyed getting on stage and getting in front of audiences. Now, you did really well at Laughs. Were you pretty well received all over the country?
On certain nights.
You did really well on Sundays.
on the dark night, I was perfect. Yeah. So, I worked the improv once in Irvine with Jack Gallagher.
Uh-huh.
A sweet guy, great guy, really super funny. And the first night, because I was going up before him, I noticed, our material, we're covering sort of the same subject matters. I mean, our acts are different. So I thought, well, I'll just go back and do some of the old stuff so I won't step on his toes. And the next night, I ate it so bad that people were like, going, oh, my God, what happened? Is he on drugs? But it's one of those nights that the more you bomb and the more people start to not like you, the worse I got. It's like, oh, yeah, you don't like that one. Here's another one you're not going to like.
Yeah, sometimes it's a competition between the entertainer and the audience. You know, hopefully you can turn them around. I've seen a few acts that got so bad they got good. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. But
if you are a little as a comic on stage, you're not a straight monologist. You have a lot of facial expressions. You're very animated, and your comedy, even though it's based on real life, it is almost cartoonish or exaggerated. Yeah. I used to love the bit about the pigeons and the bit about your brother, you know.
By the way, the two of the bits that people hated that night.
Really?
I'm telling you, it was so bizarre. The first night, I couldn't do anything wrong. You know, it's like walking on water. Like, this is going to be great. And then the next night, it's like, oh, this is going to be hell.
Well, and that is kind of the way entertainment is as a whole. I mean, it's much harder for a stand-up comic alone on stage than it might be for a band or a singer. But if you're always going to have a good night and a bad night. And what makes a professional entertainer is the one that plugs forward and does his time pretty much no matter what. I recently told a story that Bill Maher was halfway through his set and literally got booed off stage, and he gave up and just walked off stage. And so I did the right thing and fired his ass. But the most comics, when they're having a bad set, turn it around. It was a great analogy. Johnny Carson would be doing his monologue, and every night they would have different jokes that were submitted or written by his writers for him. But if things started going bad, he made that what was funny.
Yeah. But then again, he wasn't going to be up there for 45 minutes either.
Okay.
And it was Johnny Carson. And go, oh, let's go to the commercial. We'll be back.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He had a couple outs that you wouldn't have had. But I got to say, Bob.
Although I did try that one night. Let's go to commercial.
Well, I will say that for your history in stand-up comedy, if you're pinpointing one night, one bad show with Jack Gallagher, that ain't half bad.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I always like to say I was consistently okay.
Well, we found you more than okay, and luckily we got a lot of it on tape, and we've had a chance to share it with the podcast audience, and we'll have another set from you at the end of this interview. But what were the, now I mentioned the pigeons and your brother, and you used to have a great bit about your wife when she was pregnant and having your first kid, and a lot of comics have done that, but you kind of took it to the absurdity level. And
is that a nice way of saying too far?
No. Actually, I always thought that was one of your funniest bits. But what was the type of comedy or the bits that you do or remember that you really enjoyed? Well, or is it riffing?
I like the riffing part, but I like the, like you said, the baby stuff and a bunch of. I like going a little bit too far, like you described earlier, being cartoonish. And that was the thing. I think if the audience kind of bought into what I was doing, it was going to be a fun night. But if they weren't getting it, it's just like, you know, it was almost too far for some people, you know.
Well, there were a couple comics that took it even farther. Amazing Jonathan was an example of a very cartoony type of act. But he would have nights where the audience just wasn't willing to go with him on the ride.
Right. And then that happened to me a few times. Very few times that happened. Most of the time, I think because I seem very harmless and, you know, and I look kind of okay. Everybody thought, well, he looks all right. You know, he looks harmless. So then I kind of go down and start getting a little dark and doing a weird stuff. And they would buy into it most of the time. I think they realized I was just kidding around, hopefully.
Or they weren't sure.
I left one place in Albuquerque and the lady's going, I can't believe they let you have kids.
She thought you were being serious. Oh, that's funny.
What is the matter with you? You need help.
But
she was happy, as she said. So obviously she enjoyed the show. So
it's fun. Yeah. Well, one of the great things I think that I miss about owning the club and stand-up comedy was, unlike other entertainment venues, when you go to a comedy club, you know it's funny, it's going to be funny, and you may not appreciate every bit or every comic, but you're there to have a good time. You've invested in your evening. You paid your $20. You want to have a good time, and so you couldn't have a better platform to work from. And so then it's just up to the comic to bring them in through relatable material or whatever, and take them on the journey. But I think that that's interesting, and you were very, very good at it. Now, you worked for me for many years. What are some of the stories or situations that happened at Laughs that stand out to you?
Oh, geez. I worked at all three of your clubs, so and each one was different from the other. So obviously the best one was the Alley one.
Yeah, Firehouse Alley, right.
Yeah, that was great. I think, like you said earlier, the night that I was with Jimmy Burns and John Hinton, and we got to go back out. You let us screw around, and we went back out and did the Rat Pack tour.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was funny.
Yeah, that was the, because I think Dean Martin got sick, so filling in for the ailing Dean Martin was the late Elvis Presley. You know, doing that stuff that I wasn't planning on doing, but we just could do that and just have fun with it, and you know, and all the night, plus goofing off with the staff was always fun. I mean, like I said, it was a lot of fun working there because everybody was super nice. And you always set the show up right. There was always somebody that would build the show. It would build, you know, like some guys. I worked at one club and goes, boy, man, this guy coming up before you, he's got to really make it work. And I said to him, why do you want me to work? Don't we want it to be a good show? We want it to build. And, you know.
Yeah, I never understood. That's like putting somebody that's really filthy in front of a clean act. You're making it extra difficult. And that's the point is you're not just making it difficult for the entertainer, but you're going to ruin the flow of the evening for the audience. And to me, it was all about the audience.
I said, well, that's fine, but can we bring in a local guy to go up in between us? Because I knew it was kind of like a sacrifice. It was like a palate cleanser. Because I knew this guy was kind of filthy and dirty, that I won't be able to follow that. You know, because now the whole audience is going to be thinking that way. Another good example of that, and this guy was actually a brilliant comic, because I had to follow Robert Schimmel once.
Oh, you know who gosh, yeah, Schimmel, you work for me a lot.
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. And again, nice guy and just one of the best comics out there. But I did my Letterman showcase after him. And I thought that he would do, an act that he could do on TV, but nope.
Not Schimmel.
He just went for it. And he said, remember, as he got off, he was walking by and he goes, hey, did you see my set? I go, unfortunately, yes.
Well, and we should point out to the podcast listeners that Bob is not one of our squeaky clean comics, but you always worked relatively clean, and there weren't a lot of F-bombs or anything unnecessary stuff that you might get from certain entertainers.
A lot of it was innuendo, and I always let the audience fill in the blanks. So anything they were going to come up would be worse than I would.
Right. So. And I think that also made you one of the reasons why you were so successful and did so much work for us. I mean, how many acts could not only succeed at the club level, but then be featured on our Laughs in the Park crowd, which was families, and then the TV shows, which has to be PC clean. So, yeah, there was a few acts out there like Steve Bruner that are just squeaky, squeaky clean. But you certainly fell into the range on the cleaner side above some of those other funny acts, but just go in a different direction. So I know you did some of the after show stuff. You remember going bowling with everybody?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that was for a long time. That was a regular thing. I think when you stopped doing it, I was disappointed. Like, we're not going to go bowling tonight? Oh, we don't do that anymore.
We have some great video of you bowling with Dave Coulier.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You guys went out together with us one night, and I got video of you and David Coulier out bowling with the staff members.
Yeah, we should have had t-shirts made up. put the whole team together.
Yeah, and then went out and joined a league, you know.
We could have done it because nobody guttered a ball like me.
Ah, there you go. Well, we had a lot of fun. We were able, like I said, our business relationship turned into quite a friendship. I know your wife and family very well. I've known your kids since they were born, and we've had a chance to go to a lot of dinners and other functions. So I do appreciate that aspect of our relationship. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I just came across some old pictures of you playing with my kids. It looked like they were attacking you, but I'm sure it was play.
Well, I love getting down at kid level and being one of the kids. My wife will say it's still a problem.
Yeah, you look more like a carpet level at that point. They were really giving it to you.
Well, you have...
You know what? And another thing I wanted to point out too, Scott, while I have you on this little thing. You probably don't remember this, but when my dad passed away, you had sent me some money because you knew that I would be canceling gigs to pull me through. And I don't know if I ever thanked you for that, but I want to thank you for that now while, you know, 8 or 9 people are listening so they can hear that, you know, you have a heart, a heart of gold. And, and that really meant a lot to me because nobody else really reached out. Maybe one other club reached out, but that always meant a lot to me. And I really appreciated that.
You're very welcome. You know, that's what friends do when you're going through a difficult time. In fact, we were just talking, my father just passed away a few weeks ago, and you were one of the first people to reach out, and that's what friendship's all about. So, it was an honor and you're very welcome. I was happy to help during a difficult time. So yeah, I think a lot of people would find it surprising. I have a heart.
Yeah.
But
I'll tell you one thing I do remember once too. I don't know if you recall, but I got really sick once. I was at the house with the weird carpet on the walls.
Yeah.
And you came over and I couldn't get out of bed. I was so sick. So you freaked out, took me to the emergency room, and I'm all,
oh my gosh.
They hooked, then yeah, it was really bad. So the doctor goes, well, I don't know what's going on. You know, we better keep him overnight. And you just looked at him and go, well, he's got a show to do tonight. Can't you just give him something?
That's so much for having a heart.
Right. It was in the right place, though, because you were worried about the people, you know, that were paying to come see the show.
The show must go on.
And it did go on. So
they listened to me and let you go?
He said, well, let him go as long as, you know, I go see the doctor right when I get home after, because it was like a Sunday night show.
Wow. And
said, yeah. Right next day, boom, I'm in the hospital.
What a heartfelt moment for being with a club owner.
Yeah. But it's, you know, the show must go on.
Oh, so. That's a great story. Sadly, I don't remember that.
You took me up to the stage and just propped me up against the wall and put the microphone, taped it to my chest, and I'll start talking.
Well,
see your little skit.
And you know what? You probably still killed.
Oh, yeah. By killed, I mean die. But still, it was fun. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, exactly. The show must go on. Oh, great story. Thanks. But
yeah, although you made me repay it back later. You're going to have some work for me.
Well, you know, there was other instances. Remember John Fox? He was not only quite the road comic, but quite a gambler. And I can't tell you how many times we had to pay him early or advance him money on future gigs. Yeah.
He was notorious for that. Everybody, when he got there, I just had to give him this whole week's advance so he can make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember working with him once at the Birdcage Club, and somebody, as soon as he hit the stage, somebody ran and goes, hey, I just saw that guy throwing up in the bathroom.
Well, that was John Fox for you. He was, he's been discussed a few times, and we've played his sets a few times. He was, I would say, the epitome of a road comic from the 80s.
He was an animal.
He was drinking, drugs, women, you name it. But he was also a very funny act that just killed the audiences.
Yeah. I only think I saw him go too far. And that was that we were working in Houston together. And it was his birthday. And he wanted to do some, hey, you want to do some blow with me? I go, no, I don't really do that. Oh, hey, well, then you want to split a Jolt Cola?
Well, at least he gave you an option. There's a story I've told. I think I told it once before when I introduced one of his sets. But one of my memories of John Fox was he actually chased me around the green room with a spoon of Coke and challenging me to do it with him. I never did. I'm not a drug guy. But it's a very fierce memory of a guy that was a good comic and a good friend, and it's been mentioned, but sadly we lost him to cancer many years ago, but and maybe for good reason. He certainly did his share of a physical body abuse, but we've transgressed. Let's bring it back to comedy.
I'm starting to tear up here.
Well, let's put a smile on that face. And what were some of the acts that you got to work with that really had an impression on you, and at Laughs or any other location? I'm sure you got a chance to work with some of your heroes.
Yeah, I guess. You know,
maybe not.
No, I mean, I like so many different people for different reasons. It's hard that nobody really stands. I mean, mostly with the friends that I traveled around with, like Peter Golke was one of them that, you know, he always made me laugh.
Peter's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's out there. I always liked Ken Garr. It was always fun to work with. I loved his magic. Just amazing. And I had a great sense of humor.
Yeah, Ken's on one of the previous. I got a chance to interview him on one of the previous podcasts, and a really good friend, Ken Garr. But I know you mentioned your work with Jack Gallagher.
Jack Gallagher, another sweet guy. I think he had a TV show up in the area back in the day.
Yeah, he had a morning show for a while, and we were able to bring comics onto the show.
Yeah. I think I bombed on the show once, so that was nice. I think it was like an afternoon show or lunchtime show or just, it was strange, but it was fun, a lot of fun. But yeah, Jack's a great guy. And gosh, I don't know, there's just, in the early days, guys like Robin Williams.
You get a chance, Robin dropped by the club twice, but you got a chance to work with him at a few locations?
I wouldn't say work with him, but I had to go up after him a couple of times at the improv.
You know, wow, that had to be tough.
Because I had a great spot. I'm going, oh, 10:30. This is time. Bud must love me. And then I see Robin walking. I was like, oh, no. And he says, you don't mind. I'm just going to go up and do a few minutes. Oh, no, go ahead. And, you know, about an hour later.
Yeah, it is so funny because the regular listening audience wouldn't know that as funny as Robin was, he really loved the stage. And so whenever he was in town, like the two times he dropped in at last, I never had him as a paid act. He was already too big. But he would drop in at clubs, and no club owner is going to say, no, Robin Williams can't go on. So he would always be allowed.
They shouldn't either. You know, and he was great. He always killed. Always. But he just drained everything out of the room.
Yeah, nobody riffed like Robin Williams. And like you said, the comics would all be excited to see this hero of stand-up comedy. And at the same time, if you had to go up after him, it just, like you said, he ate an audience up. And but what a great way to go, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would think that night I just went up on stage with the broom and go, it's over, folks. Go home. There's nothing left to see.
Well, that probably got a big laugh.
Yeah. My only. But still, it was a lot of fun. And actually, when I was doing skit groups, I ran into him a lot because he would always come in and work at the Comedy Store Players.
Yeah. So, that's interesting. So I know that you did stand-up comedy for a couple decades. In the last 10 or 15 years, you were doing some more writing. And if you still do some writing, don't you?
I wouldn't say. I don't really write per se. People come in and go, hey, what do you think of this? I go, how about if you do this or that? You go, okay.
So you fix things.
In my head, I fix it, whether they use it or not. You know, who knows?
Well, but we all know. Well, we don't all know. But
I'm like a mob guy. So you're a fixer. Yeah, I fix things.
No, but I mean, there are guys in television and movies and even for stage that fix comedy. That or maybe fix is the wrong word. But your sense of humor and the way you can twist something to make something funnier has to have been an asset. I know, for example, Peter Galky's done a few movies, and you've helped spruce up those scripts.
Well, by sprucing up, we've talked it over. So I won't say that he sent me the material and I rewrote it. We just talked it out, that kind of thing. So
yeah, but that's again, that's a real value, Bob.
Well, it's nice to have somebody to you know, bounce ideas off of. So that was the only thing I did.
But it gives you a chance to contribute to the comedy flow. So you kept busy and stuff, but we were talking about writing, and you have a great friendship and have done a lot of work with Fred Wolf, right?
Fred and I, we started out together. I used to give him a ride to the Westwood Comedy Store all the time. I'd always pick him up. He wanted me to pick him up on Santa Monica Boulevard. He goes, just pick me up on Santa Monica Boulevard. I go, no, why don't I just go to your house and pick you up? Because I don't want people to get the wrong idea, like I'm picking up with something else.
So Fred, the streetwalker, hey, come by and pick me up.
Well, I know, I'm not saying he was, but I'm not saying he wasn't. But you had to make an ends meet somehow.
Exactly.
Somebody wasn't paying.
Well, speaking of success, Fred's had a lot of success. Can you share with the audience some of what he's worked on?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was one of the head writers for Saturday Night Live for a long time. His Drunk Parents is actually on Netflix right now. It's a movie he directed and co-wrote with Peter. So he's got a lot of stuff out there.
And I thought you did some writing work with him in the last couple decades.
Well, we did one thing. Actually, we did it, and he forgot that it was my bit. And I called him about it. I go, hey, man, that's my toy stuff you're doing. And they realized, oh, that's where I've seen it.
What did that appear in?
It was a Spade movie. Dickie, I can't even remember the name of the movie. About a childhood star who grew up. Dickie Roberts, maybe, is that my idea?
You're talking about a David Spade vehicle?
Yeah. Hey, you don't sound very happy about David Spade.
I'm not as big a David Spade fan as some people are, but the fact that Fred Wolf had a chance to work with him on a project has probably been rewarding to Fred. Well, I know he's a successful writer, and didn't he get into some directing too?
Yeah. Like I said, Drunk Parents, he just directed that. And House Bunny, he directed that movie. And Wilderness, he directed that. And actually, the actors played by the actors, but the characters were Fred Wolf, Peter Gahlke in the movie.
Oh.
So they probably should have changed the names, but, you know, go with what you know.
Well, you know, the reason I brought that up was that we want to explain to the podcast audience that you were a really solid, funny, headlining road comic for a couple decades, and then your kids came along, and your wife has a very successful career as a law assistant. I'm not sure the right term. And you stepped back a little bit from show business and to become a house dad and help raise your kids. But you didn't give up the industry, because while doing that, you were working with Fred Wolf and Peter Gahlke in helping spritz up or fix, I don't know what you want to call it, boost the comedy level in certain scripts and writings. And I think that that has helped keep your creative mind going.
And I'm just used to playing by myself. It doesn't matter.
Well, okay, you play with yourself a lot. Let's not go there.
Yeah, that's a whole different story. No, it's pretty much worn nub. But anyways,
well,
I only know that because, like I said, I dressed up for this thing.
Yeah.
By dressing up, I mean undressed.
Exactly. Good to know that you took the podcast serious. Well, tell you what, Bob, we will be seeing each other soon, but it's been really something I've been looking forward to because of our history at Laughs Unlimited and because of our friendship. I've been looking forward to a chance to interview for the show. So thanks so much for taking time today and sharing.
Thanks. I hope I didn't disappoint.
No. And as I've mentioned in several previous podcasts and coming up right now in this podcast, I have a very funny comedy set from Mr. Bob Worley. Bob, thanks so much for not only being a great entertainer for laughs all these years, but for being a great friend. And ladies and gentlemen, why don't we showcase some of what we've been talking about? The very funny, relatable, an unbelievably nice guy. Here's some comedy from Bob Worley.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, thank you. Now, you guys are a good crowd. I think you deserve some good comedy. We have that coming up right now. Kind of a gentleman that we feel we kind of discovered, at least in Northern California. A very funny guy, a good friend of ours. I think you'll enjoy him from Southern California. Let's have a big round of applause, Mr. Bob Worley. Right here, Bob Worley.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, what do you guys want to do? Here we go. Here's something we can talk about now. Now, this is something that happened to me a couple of weeks ago now. Now, this, I'm sure this has happened to at least a couple of guys here. Have you ever been driving along? You know, you're just cruising along, right? And all of a sudden, like a cat or a dog or a rabbit darts out in front of your car. You just kind of go, boom, oh, geez, oh, gosh. You know, and you feel terrible, don't you? So right away you think to yourself, well, maybe I just kind of skinned him. yeah, I'm sure I just skinned him. I thought I saw him in a rearview mirror. He's okay. He's all right. You know, it's like crammed up under your fender, you know. He'll be okay. He's all right. Oh, there he goes. Oh, he ran off in the bushes. He'll be fine. He's okay. You know, no, you're like digging him out of the fender later. You'll be okay, big buddy. There you go, big fella. There you go. Oh, wait, you need these hind legs, don't you? There you go. You're all right. You know, I don't think we skinned him. No, he's fine. Go on, shoot. Get out of here. You know. That ever happened to anybody here? Yeah, well, that never happened to me either. Phew, man. Now, the only reason I brought all this up is a couple of weeks ago, driving around town in Hollywood, I accidentally hit a pigeon, and I can see you guys are pretty broke up about it. Make me feel like a butcher, that's it, yeah. Now, I felt horrible. Now, have you ever been driving around town, and there's like a little group of them, they're out in the middle of the street, they're eating something, you don't know what, right? And it's like the closer you get to them, the more you think to yourself, well, they'll move, you know. You know, and they don't, you know. And you look in the rear view mirror, there's just those two little wings all... All the other pigeons are off to the side of the road going, Billy didn't make it, man! And then they run out there and eat them. Oh, well. Jeez. I don't know, man. Did you guys ever do that when you were a kid? Remember playing around the front yard, you get thirsty, so you... water, the water hose, and you forget to breathe. You're just going. Oh, on a really, really hot summer day, you let your friends drink first, because that little metal edge on the hose just goes. Run around the yard, the hose stuck. Come get it off. I can't wait to wait until I get old. I'm going to do that all the time. Hey, 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 nice cold drink of water, right to it. Nice and cold, boy, nice and cold, you know. Because if I did it now, I'd get arrested, so I can't do anything. When you guys were kids, did you ever beg for a toy that you just had to have? I mean, you had to have this thing, right? And right when you get it, it's like, this is a piece of crap. Do you ever get those toys from Whammo? Remember Whammo? Anybody here ever get the Whammo water wiggle? Okay, okay, now what was the idea of that thing? What was that? So your parents could have you beat without them being around? It's like, you're not more of a Bobby. We'll turn on the water. Okay, Mom, go ahead. I'm all ready. It's like wrapped around your throat. You're hanging in the backyard like a big pinata. Get me out of here. Your friends are beating you with sticks trying to get candy out of you. Get away from me. Come on. Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, what about a slip and slide? Did you ever get a slip and slide? Yeah. Now, those are great. Those are great. Unless your yard's made out of gravel. Oh, jeez. You know, you forget to put the water in, you go diving on a thing. Oh, man. You let it go sliding out in the street. Whoa, 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 whoa. Some big truck. What was that? I don't know what it was. We just kind of skinned him. He'll be okay. He's fine. He's all right. He ran off in the bushes. He'll be okay, you know. Oh, here we go. Here we go. How about an ant farm? Did anybody here ever get an ant farm? Okay, weren't you disappointed? I mean, first of all, it's not even a farm, right? They don't grow nothing, man. You know, but I thought I made a fun Etcher sketch. I thought, well, that's a nice design, but let's see another one, you know. Let's see if we can spell my name this time. Come on, boy. You know? Boy, man, you're like God with those things, aren't you? You know, it's like, oh, what's that? An earthquake? Whoa! A big glass of water. It's a flood! Quick, everybody to high ground, boy. Oh, here we go. Here we go, and then I gotta get out of it. This, to me, is the all-time piece of crap of a toy ever, at least in my book. An electric football game. Remember these things? Now, that's a new computer game. The old metal kind of vibrated. Now, remember, guys, wouldn't the very first day you spent hours setting up these plays? Like, oh, man, check this play out. It's righteous. Okay, this guy, he'll block this guy here. I'll run through here. He'll pass it. He'll go in for a touchdown. Okay, ready? Turn it on. It's like, what the heck's that, man? Guys, I'm supposed to break dance. What is this thing, you know? What a piece of crap, man. I hated that thing. Well, my sister left it, though. She'd be in the bedroom for hours. I don't know what the heck was going on, man. But anyway, you guys have been a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun up here. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, Your Host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.